Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
A lot of items to get to on this week's episode of Wrestling Inside the Ropes. Shawn Michaels is back, we think, reportedly. What does it mean for The Undertaker, Brock Lesnar? There are like 17 different special events the WWE is promoting, and WWE put out another list, and I'm personally offended by it. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5thesportshub app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike Riley, Joe Murray of the In-N-Out Gambling Podcast asked me this very simple question on Thursday night when I saw him before he recorded his podcast with Dan Lifshatz. Does Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement offend you?
Well, Jimmy, good evening to you, and thanks again to everybody for listening to us here this week.
Yeah, no grab ass. Just answer my question.
I'm just playing the role. No, absolutely not. I love it. In fact, I told you a couple of weeks ago when he did come back there for the promo against The Undertaker, I think it's a great thing for the sport of professional wrestling when you have two icons like that in the same ring and the chance to potentially go face-to-face one-on-one. Or in a tag team situation, which we're pretty much going to see in Australia, you know, in the corner of Triple H and Kane. How much more time do we have to see Shawn and The Undertaker together? Shawn and Triple H together. Two of the biggest stars of all time. When you get a chance like this, you cash in. Similar to what we saw at WrestleMania this year with The Undertaker and John Cena. Two huge superstars, so I am not offended. I think it's a great situation. In the end, it's all about the bottom dollar, because this is an international show in Australia.
$45 million, Mike Riley. $45 million.
And it's only going to go up. It's only going to go up for what they cash in. It's only going to go up for the next time they try to bid on it. That's going to help the product here for Australia. Good for WWE bringing him back. Good for Shawn Michaels agreeing to it. Not offended, Jimmy. What say you?
So it doesn't offend me per se, but if you're telling me that Shawn Michaels has to beat The Undertaker, as I said last week, to become unretired, I'm in. Yeah. If you're telling me that Shawn Michaels is coming out of retirement to fight AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, The Miz, Samoa Joe, someone of that type in a match that we've never seen in a main event position, I'm in for that. But a tag team match with Kane and Undertaker against Shawn Michaels and Hunter, that really does nothing for me. And that's not to say that it won't be a fabulous match, but it's just not a match that I'm looking forward to. In the same way, I'm not really looking forward to Triple H versus The Undertaker again for the last time. I thought Miami was supposed to be the last time. It was the end of an era. But right. As we know, money walks and you know the rest. It could be that I'm also just not as invested in the competitors in the match, maybe as much as I once was. Currently, I can watch Samoa Joe and AJ Styles wrestle 30 minutes once a month and be thrilled, and I've been watching them wrestle since about 2003-ish, and I've enjoyed most, if not all, of their matches because I'm super invested in both those characters and both those wrestlers. Mm-hmm. But I just, meh. Like, give me a new match.
Well, here's my thing, Jimmy, and I'm going to stick to this from what I said a couple of weeks ago, and I really believe that this is the beginning of a match again with Shawn and The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And, you know, here we are. They're going to Australia. The seed has been planted. And I think if that is going to happen, I'm all in on Shawn. I have no issue with it. Is it good for business with money? Of course. People are going to be invested in it. But I don't know. Is it necessary? No. But am I invested in it with the fact that he's there? Yes. No problem. All for it. Give me Sean any day of the week. Greatest in-ring performer I've ever seen in my life. I've said it before, and I'll say it again.
Yeah. 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 Nah.
Well, who's yours?
Greatest performer of all time in ring?
Yeah.
I don't think it's Sean.
Really? Okay.
And I that's
think
an
he'd
unpopular,
be in the top five.
I think that's an unpopular opinion.
Well, just with the Shawn Michaels situation, because I hold him in such a high regard, in a situation where he's able to come back like this, as Joe Murray would say, I am in on Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I'm out on Shawn Michaels, but that's okay.
Wow. All right.
I think what it is you reach a point with a wrestler where you're like, they're done. And yeah, I think I've reached that point with Shawn Michaels. And that's not taking anything away from Shawn Michaels because he is a great in-ring performer. He's just, I'm just down on Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. That's your opinion.
You know?
Are you were you a Bret Hart guy?
Oh, I loved Bret Hart. Bret Hart should be in my top five.
That's the answer why you're
Bret Hart
Shawn
should
Michaels.
Be in my top five.
Yep, there we go. That's all we needed to hear. I get it.
It's because I'm Canadian, damn it.
You know, every time I say to Jimmy, you're a fine American, I'm Canadian, damn it.
So you interested in what Meltzer has to say about this?
Let's hear it.
Quoting from the Wrestling Observer, Michaels for years has been adamant that he wouldn't come out of retirement, but the money offer was likely too much to turn down. Similarly, it was believed that Lesnar was done with WWE after SummerSlam. But the amount of money paid for the Saudi Arabia deal, a show that is far more lucrative now than WrestleMania, was enough to get Lesnar to return for the date. More on Lesnar. The Lesnar deal was not a last-minute deal. During the week prior to SummerSlam, it was expected by the Lesnar camp that McMahon would make a huge offer for the Saudi Arabia show, as well as WrestleMania. Lesnar has not signed a new UFC contract. And then it goes on about how he's essentially going to get himself into a bidding war between UFC and WWE and when his next UFC fight could be, who it could be against. We don't care about UFC. But here's where Meltzer continues. Whether the $40 to $45 million deal from Saudi Arabia was made for two shows this year or that price for each show individually won't be known until the fourth quarter business numbers come out at the end of January or early February. There's a confidentiality clause, but WWE as a public company has to report the income, and it will be put in a category where it's clear you can pretty much estimate what that number is. Aside from the Michaels and Lesnar matches, the Saudi Arabia show is going to be built around a one-night single elimination tournament. Brock Lesnar's back, Mike. How do you feel about it?
Well, again, on the reaction that I had last week after the Hell in the Cell when we taped this show immediately afterwards, still really surprised. And you know, when I heard his music hit, I'll say it like I did last week, and I'll say it again. I was like, wait a minute, who was that? It took me a good minute to realize it was Brock Lesnar. So, again, very, very surprised that he is back. Didn't think this would be here, but the money does talk. And, again, they're building up Australia. Excuse me. Saudi Arabia.
No, it's okay because they're confused with what they're promoting too. They've got three shows or four shows or 17 million shows.
Right.
Like, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And centrally focus me.
You know, I think the thing is, okay, let me go back to Brock in 1 second, but I think why they're doing this, they're looking at it as a bridge to the Survivor Series. Okay, that's your next one of the big.
No. They're not big. These international shows are now bigger and more important than anything you have in the States. This is the problem.
Of the traditional big four. So I think that's why they're stuffing them down our face before your next big four in the United States. You know, Australia, then Saudi Arabia. It's a huge thing. It's huge, but it's way too much. Too much down our throat. Brock Lesnar, surprised. But when the money talks, you can't turn it down. I think the ship has kind of sailed between he and Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. But
so why does Vince McMahon keep bringing him back?
He's a draw. People are invested.
So this is the thing is you Brock who's
good on the mic.
Do you think that? Well, actually, let me back up a little bit. How much do you think that Shawn and Brock are getting, because I have to think that they're getting at least $1 million for the appearance. That's $1 million to Brock. That's $1 million to Shawn Michaels.
And what do you think The Undertaker is getting?
$1 million.
Yeah, I was going to say in that ballpark too. I mean, they're going to get
flipped, Hunter's going to get $1 million because he's in a big program, even though he's not.
Right. Yeah, it's, you can't turn down the dollar.
So essentially, if they've gotten $40 million for this, you've just distributed $4 million for four wrestlers.
Yeah.
Which is stupid.
It's ridiculous. And
but God bless him.
Absolutely. And for Brock's case too, Jimmy, the fact that he's able to, you know, they got the belt off him. At SummerSlam,
it's a championship, damn it.
They got the championship off him,
even though I just watched a video where Vince McMahon on television is clearly calling it a belt.
What year was this?
This was a Steve Austin, where it was Unforgiven 08. And it was when Taker and Kane pinned Austin and won the championship, and Vince is running down the aisle and screaming, "Bring me the belt, give me the belt."
No, Unforgiven 98, not 08.
98, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, yeah. That was actually a pretty good one. That was a good pay-per-view. I just think that if they're able to get the belt, the championship, the title off him, whatever you want to use, go ahead, and he's coming back for it, Brock at this point in his career is like, hey, if they're going to pay me the money, I'll do it. I don't care. So he doesn't care about any accolades. He doesn't care about the ego. He just wants the money.
No, he's a businessman. Gorilla Monsoon used to always say, if you're in this business, if you're in this for anything other than money, then you're a fool.
Yeah, there you go. So he gets it the Gorilla Monsoon way. So that's why Vince McMahon's bringing him there, the draw, the name, and he knows he's going to go to UFC eventually.
Do you think they put the, here's actually, this pop just popped in my mind. Do you think they'd actually put the championship back on Brock?
I was thinking about that too, actually.
Oh, that'd be so good. I need
I
that.
Think
I need then, Brock as the Universal Champion again. I need it.
And you need the internet to explode. So
yes.
So theoretically, if that does happen,
They won't though.
Well, then you're doing a total merry-go-round again for WrestleMania. Brock versus Roman. That's exactly what you're riding into once again. Or even Braun Strowman again. Have a triple threat. But that would be cool.
Do you know the crime of all of is that the Roman Reigns chase to finally beating Brock Lesnar, if we were in a different era, it would be one of the great wrestling chases of all time.
Totally.
You think about Roman going from essentially the Royal Rumble right before WrestleMania 31 and it taking him this many years to finally get the championship and get a pinfall victory over Brock Lesnar. And all that had to go into it. I mean, you want to talk about a great chase? That essentially has been ruined because the fans can't appreciate the greatness of Roman Reigns. I couldn't even get that out with a straight face. I'm sorry.
Well, they're beating Vince McMahon in his own game. That's exactly what they're
doing. I'm happy Brock's back. I think Brock just brings so much credibility and fan emotion to the match.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see him compete. I think he's going to lose, and then they're going to go with Braun Strowman versus Brock at WrestleMania in New York.
Well, and the other thing too, Jimmy, with Brock back here, another way to answer your question, why is Vince bringing him back? Because he knows he's going back to UFC. He's going to have that publicity as
crossover, you know, promotion, 100%.
Exactly. That's all it is. So, boom. That's your answer.
So one of the things that is noted here by Meltzer is that there's going to be a one-night single elimination World Cup tournament. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that they did the Greatest Royal Rumble, they're doing a one-night tournament. I love tournaments. I just I love tournaments. I love one-night wrestling tournaments.
Really?
I think they're fabulous because you can tell so many different stories within the night and the tournament.
Okay.
I can't wait to see the brackets. I love the bracket idea. Like I love the wrestling tournament.
Okay.
So Mike, what's your favorite wrestling tournament?
Well, the one that I was most invested in was probably the 1998 Survivor Series.
That was the deadly game.
Exactly. The one most invested in. And, you know, the ultimate Mr. McMahon screw job when we thought it was going to be Mankind as the, you know, holding on to the belt there as a champion. And then The Rock shocked the world and he went corporate, which was great for business. you know, that was one I was most invested in because, you know, we knew we were going to have a new champion at that time. But my favorite, though, to be honest with you, I know you're saying you like the tournament format.
Oh, I love the tournament. I love one-night tournaments.
No, that's cool. But I got to go with, for one, I really appreciate it as a wrestling fan. 1993, King of the Ring, June 13th, 93, it was in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio.
The Nutter Center.
The Nutter Center, exactly. Bret Hart won the King of the Ring. He beat Bam Bam Bigelow in the finals.
Scott Hall in the first round and Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig in the second round.
Which was a very underappreciated match.
It's a great match.
It was awesome. It was like a step and a half below, not even a step and a half below, a half step below their SummerSlam 91 match. It was excellent. And it was kind of odd at that time, too, Jimmy, because if you recall, Mr. Perfect was a face. So it wasn't too common to see two baby faces, or not a baby face, but two faces go at it. Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect in the semifinals right there. I just thought, you know, the night was evolved around Bret Hart. It was right after he lost the title at WrestleMania 9, where we later found out that Hogan, the whole story, backstory on that there. And then that was Hogan's last match that night at King of the Ring 93. But the whole event was based around Bret. And then he got the crap beat out of him by Jerry Lawler, which broke my heart.
Well, they had to do something for Bret because they took the title away from him. And depending on who you talk to, Bret was supposed to beat Hogan at SummerSlam that year. And
yes, exactly.
Hogan said that never happened. Vince apparently told Bret that never actually happened. But, you know, these wrestlers, they hear things.
And I know you know what I'm talking about on the same show we do listen to. In the locker room before, Bret went right after Hogan. He drew that picture at him, and they, you know, so all that stuff. However, just one other one, too. The 94 King of the Ring was not bad, too, where Owen Hart won, where they absolutely put him up as the King of Hearts. That was very good, too. It really appreciated Owen more now, obviously, in that situation. But the 93 King of the Ring was my favorite one-night tournament, Jimmy.
The Bret Hart King of the Ring tournament is definitely a good one. Owen Hart winning it was a fabulous one. The Owen Hart winning started a very good or I should say it added another chapter to the story, because I believe that was the same night that the Anvil, who was the corner man for Bret Hart defending his championship against Diesel, who was the Intercontinental Champion, turned on Bret, but didn't do so in necessarily a match, in a match. He interfered.
Right.
I think he caused a disqualification, and then he aligned with Owen later in the evening, helping Owen win that tournament.
Right, and he also, wasn't he in Owen's corner in that steel cage match there?
Yep, the one at the United Center in SummerSlam, which many people call the greatest cage match of all time.
Wasn't bad. Yeah, that was a good one.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, just set up a lot of storylines. I apologize.
Oh, no, it's my fault. It's my fault. It's always my fault.
No, it's all good.
My favorite tournament is the WrestleMania 4 tournament. And I feel this way because I was at that age where I just loved everything wrestling. And I loved the different matchups all on one night.
Yep.
And I think it's especially because you weren't getting matches like this on television. You were getting Barry Horowitz against the Ultimate Warrior. And here you had a full night of DiBiase versus Duggan, or Macho Man versus Greg Valentine, or Macho Man versus DiBiase. Hogan Andre was part of that tournament. And I enjoyed the storytelling of Macho Man's chase to the championship, and the finale of the Mega Powers like officially being a unit, and Hogan helping Savage win the championship that was stolen from him by DiBiase and Andre. I thought the whole night was great storytelling, and I thought that they put together, there wasn't like the Steamboat Savage match that was, five-star classic, 7 stars in Japan. It was just a good night of wrestling, and I enjoyed it.
You do realize that's rated as one of the worst WrestleManias of all time, right?
And you realize that I'm generally a contrarian.
Yes, you are. That's a fact.
And you also realize that I generally go to the beat of my own drum.
This is very true.
You've lived this.
Trust me, I could write a book on this.
You have lived this. Me just going out on my own. So
I'll write a book on it, and in fact, I'll have Mike Felger do the foreword. How's that?
So WWE put out a list of things, another list that personally offended me. This was WWE's list of Triple H's greatest rivals. Number one, Undertaker. Number two, Shawn Michaels. Number three, John Cena. Number four, Mick Foley. Number five, The Rock. This list personally offends me. But before I get to why it personally offends me, Mike, what did you think of this list?
Well, similar to the Undertaker's top five rivals of all time that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we know why this list is out there, Jimmy, to promote the Australia match. So it does offend me, too. I am not a fan of this at all. In fact, I'll give you my top five Triple H rivals right now. You want them?
Please do. And then I will give you mine, and then it's going to be a while before you say another word.
Okay, so here we go. I'm going to start by saying this, that The Undertaker is not even in my top five for Triple H's best rivals, okay? Yes, he has had three good matches with The Undertaker back at WrestleMania 17?
17 in Houston.
17 in Houston, thank you. 27 in Atlanta, and then 28 in Miami. Three great matches. Not taking anything away from him, but that's not a rival. That is not a rival. Let me try to compare that to sports in a way. I'm trying to think of the best thing.
Oh, it's easy. It was Yankees Red Sox before the Red Sox won in 04.
Okay, that's still a rival, but they're always going to play
each other.
It's not
because the Yankees won so many championships before you got your sixth.
Okay. Well, I was also going to say this.
Oh,
like,
people
you know,
are gonna hate me for that analogy.
Well, all right, Bruins Vancouver. Okay, Bruins and Vancouver. That was a great series, but that's not a rival. Do you know what I mean? So Triple H, Undertaker, great series, but it's still not a rival. That's what I'm trying to say. Triple H's best rivals of all time. I'm going to start. Number five, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He is number four on my list.
Number four. Well, I can't wait to hear yours, Jimmy. But I'm going to go with that as five because I had an excellent match. No Way Out 2001.
Three Stages of Hell.
Yes, and that was the first time they fought after he put Austin out of work with the car accident. Remember, we heard about that. And they actually feuded for a good 2 years. It really was 99 up until 2002, where they were going at it. So
there's a great backstory about how Austin didn't think that Triple H was in his league, and that's why he lost the title to Mick Foley in Minneapolis at SummerSlam 99. I don't know that that's true, but that is a story that I have heard.
Okay, so Austin is number five. Number four for me, Kurt Angle.
So he was on my honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions. Okay. Well, the reason I put Kurt Angle there was because, you know, that was when Kurt Angle won the King of the Ring in Boston, actually, 2000. And that was the whole interest there with Stephanie McMahon, Kurt and Stephanie. And then those
they
two
had that
kinda
great triple threat match at SummerSlam where Kurt Angle got knocked out on the announce table. It was Kurt Angle, Triple H, and The Rock.
Excellent. And that was when Angle was at his height, I thought.
100%.
Yeah, and Triple H was still right up there, too. So I am fine with Kurt Angle in my top five. Number three, this was a tough one, but I put him number three, Shawn Michaels. You got Shawn in there?
Shawn Michaels is not on my list.
Not? Oh, boy, okay. Well, the reason I put Shawn there was because these two, you know, they work together as DX. They know each other so well. Triple H turned his back on him there. In the early part of the 2000s, you know, they had the last man standing match. They also had a three stages of hell. They had the first ever elimination chamber.
One of the worst Hell in a Cell matches I've ever seen in my life. They went 56 minutes and it was a terrible match.
Okay. But the story there between both of them, that is the best part of this rival here. Shawn and Triple H. Triple H turned his back on him, the ultimate villain. Even at the Raw in Worcester, December 98, where Mick Foley won the belt for the first time, I still want to know who
Triple H planted Shawn Michaels' face in that car.
And which we found out years later. So there you go. So stuff like that. Shawn and Triple H, that's number three. Number two, Mick Foley.
Mick Foley is number one on my list.
I knew he would be. But I'm going to put him at number two. And the reason why, you know, again, and Foley deserved to beat Triple H. He got the shaft at the Royal Rumble in 2000. He got the shaft at the No Way Out there on the Hell in the Cell. You know, Foley, I thought he made Triple H a better performer. I really did. Damn good matches those two fought. Started in 97, went right up to that, you know, 2000 era there. And Foley took the brunt of the losses there to Triple H, but made Triple H a better performer. And number one, you know what my number one is going to be.
Should be The Rock.
Yes, it is. The Rock. And you got to go back to 96, 97, when The Rock was Rocky Maivia, the face, and Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the heel, the snob from Greenwich, Connecticut. And they were such a major part of the Attitude Era, where Triple H with DX and The Rock with the Nation of Domination. It was a good feud. It was funny, too. Great on the microphone. SummerSlam 98, a good ladder match.
One of the best ladder matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, and then they actually had, if you remember, the 60-man Iron Man match.
60-man Iron Man match at Judgment Day, where The Undertaker came in at the end, and they had the whole mistimed finish.
Exactly. So I thought it was just a very underappreciated rival in the Attitude Era, which obviously was overshadowed by Vince and Austin as the top one for the Attitude Era. I think we can all agree to that. This right here, The Rock and Triple H, a very underappreciated one, carried the Intercontinental Division for a while, and they both made each other better, kind of like with Foley and Triple H. So Triple H has had some good rivals over the years. Rock is number one. Let me hear your top five, Jimmy.
All right, so I want honorable mentions to Kurt Angle and to CM Punk. And the CM Punk one is more of an off-air thing than it is an on-air thing, so that's why he gets the honorable mention. I'd have liked to have seen Punk and Triple H actually have like a good match, good one-on-one match. They had one match that was garbage, and they never really got the program because they like hate each other in real life. Okay. The Kurt Angle program you mentioned, it's an honorable mention for me. Number five is Daniel Bryan for me. And that's a situation where I think they only had the one match at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. Fabulous match. But the story was from SummerSlam previous year all the way to WrestleMania in New Orleans. And that's where they had the rivalry. It wasn't a physical rivalry per se, but it was a verbal one. Number four is Steve Austin. Their series of matches on camera was good. The backstory, which I kind of mentioned, which I don't know if it's true or not, but it's a good rumor and innuendo that Steve Austin didn't see Triple H on his level. I don't know if it's true, but it's a good story, even if it's not true. Chris Jericho is number three. Again, it's kind of like an on-camera, off-camera thing. But what I will tell you is that their WrestleMania 18 main event match wasn't... It was in the wrong place on the card. But their Hell in a Cell match, the next pay-per-view, was really good. I thought the night that Jericho won the WWF Championship from Triple H in the opening match of a Raw was really good. And that should have been a moment that edged Jericho and Stone as a top guy. The Rock is number two for me. Of course, The Rock won the Intercontinental Championship from Triple H at Raw Thursday Raw, which was in Lowell, Massachusetts. The fabulous ladder match at SummerSlam. The program that they did through the 2000s while Triple H was champion. Them just exchanging the world championship. And they still do teasers now and then that they're going to fight one more time, which who knows if they will or who knows if they won't. But more recently in San Francisco at WrestleMania 31, Ronda and Rock standing in the same ring as Stephanie and Triple H. And I think this is why my number one is Mick Foley, which you could all see coming. And this is kind of why this list personally offended me. If there's no Mick Foley, Triple H doesn't get over as big as he did. From the point that Triple H beat Mankind at King of the Ring to their program, which included Triple H versus Cactus Jack at Madison Square Garden, the same Raw that Steve Austin stunned Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Fast forward to Triple H beating Mankind for his first WWF championship the night after SummerSlam 99. Triple H, after that, struggled as the champion. He gets into a program with Cactus Jack, which had great matches at the Royal Rumble 2000, No Way Out, the Hell in a Cell, where Mick had his career on line. Mick lost that match. And then, for me, the emotion of the WrestleMania 2000 Four Corners match with Hunter, walking in and out as the champion. If it's not for all the work that Mick put into that program and the emotional connection that, you know, I had with it, and I think a lot of the fans did, I'm not sure that Hunter gets to that main event level coming out of WrestleMania 2000. I think everybody thought that, at least I shouldn't say everybody, I think a high percentage of people thought that it was either going to be the Mick Foley championship win finally, or it was going to be The Rock, because WrestleMania always ended with that happy ending and the champion, except Yokozuna, but that turned into Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. You know, and a personal story about WrestleMania 2000 and my investment in Mick Foley, that I was openly cheering for him along with a group of friends, one sitting in a living room and one sitting in kind of a porch that was a converted extra room that had a television. when Triple H pinned Foley, I honked out so much for The Rock, because I was so angry that the WWF would have Hunter beat Mick three pay-per-views in a row.
Right.
And then The Rock got beat, and I was taunted by my friends for weeks. One in particular who used to give me a ride home from my friend's house. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that I walked home that night because I was so angry at the result. And my friend, being such a villain and such a jerk, I believe he drove past me as slow as he could, blaring Triple H's theme song.
That's awesome.
So
that's the ultimate heel. Now, quick trivia question. Who was in Mick Foley's corner at WrestleMania 2000?
That would be Linda McMahon.
Very good, Jimmy. Very good. Yeah, there was a McMahon in every corner in that one. That's a good top five there. Not a bad. And also, I think
why it hurts me is Mick Foley's my all-time favorite wrestler, for those who don't know. And it's just all the work that I think Mick really put into the program. And not to say that Hunter didn't put in the program, but
right.
You had the emotional investment of, like, Mick had just come off of the Hell in a Cell, and it kind of upped him to another level
as far
as performer. And here's Triple H, who looks the part of being the villain champion, and DX, and he was coming off an injury. And then they put the championship on him, and they really, like, thrust him to the forefront.
Right.
And he was kind of floundering. I think he was floundering.
Yeah, and you know what? I just thought, I mean, not taking anything away from his talent and, you know, his in-ring ability, but I don't think he was necessarily the best heel champion or the best champion that they could have had. Well, I think they could have had...
One kind of small thing on Triple H. I feel like Triple H is one... He actually called Booker T this on a WrestleMania 19 documentary.
Yep.
He called Booker T a hit-or-miss wrestler. You never know what you're going to get, whether you're going to get great Booker T or great... I feel that way about Triple H.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about some of his best matches and some of his worst matches. And you just... like, back-to-back WrestleManias, he's in the ring, he being Triple H, with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins.
Right.
And after the entrances, people got up from their seats and they took a walk.
Yeah,
right?
That's a problem.
And both those matches were 30 minutes long. And in the case of the Roman Reigns match in Dallas, we were all just tired.
We're dead.
We're just
absolutely
exhausted. Yeah. At the point of the Triple H Seth Rollins match, we're like, okay, we saw the cool entrances. Now they're going to do 30 minutes. Let's go take a walk.
Yeah.
But then you get Triple H against The Undertaker, which has been fabulous. Fabulous matches. Then you get Triple H being part of the Ronda Rousey match this year in New Orleans.
Yep.
Then you get Triple H versus Daniel Bryan. Fabulous match. So you don't know which Triple H you're going to get.
And again, back to the original point, to put The Undertaker as his number one rival is ridiculous, and we're both in agreement out there. There is not top five material. Good matches, but not number one rival.
Meltzer had a note about a potential WrestleMania match that upset me a little bit. Ronda Rousey versus Cyborg. And Cyborg did an interview, didn't act like there was a deal in place. Ronda Rousey would have to be consulted about this idea. But for me, if Ronda and Charlotte doesn't happen at WrestleMania in New York, I'll be disappointed unless they do it at Evolution. And again, this is to something that we've talked about for weeks now, is there's a part of me that thinks that the Becky Lynch Charlotte story is slow turning both of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the best story going on in WWE right now. But when Road Dogg had that tweet that I'm obsessed with, the story that WWE is telling versus the story that we want to see, who's to say that they're telling the story that we want just in a longer term process? Let me phrase that a little bit better.
Okay.
When Becky and Charlotte have their final match in the program, if Charlotte cheats to win and regain the championship because she can't beat Becky Lynch fair and square in the middle, doesn't that get what everybody seemed to want at SummerSlam accomplished, just over a longer term period because they're in a program and they have to tell a story?
But are they too late to it, though? That's the question. Will the fans accept it?
But are we talking about the hardcore fans, or are we talking about all the fans?
Okay, I'm going to say
that's
all.
Where,
yeah, that's where you got to break it down. Yeah, and I understand that. You could get the double turn. Yes, it would make sense. The Ronda Charlotte situation for WrestleMania 35. Jimmy, until you just mentioned Evolution a minute ago with the women's pay-per-view, I totally forgot about that too, because I'm so invested in Australia and Saudi Arabia right now. Back
they have 30
point.
Shows that they're promoting in the next 6 weeks.
It's insane. It's way too
it's
much.
It's stupid.
Including the best of all, the very underrated super show here in Boston. But I just, yeah. The Cyborg with Ronda Rousey, cross promotion, here you go again. If you're going to do Ronda and Charlotte, you may have to do it sooner than later. You may have to do it sooner than later, because if they're going to bring out these big names with Cyborg, if she's willing to come out to go to WWE for a one-night show-off with Ronda Rousey, then this should happen sooner than later. But you'll be very disappointed if that don't happen at WrestleMania, huh?
Oh yeah, I'll be upset unless it's the main event of Evolution, and then I'll be fine with it. But I just think that if WrestleMania is going to have a women's main event, it's going to be Ronda against whoever. And on my own bias level, I hope that that spot happens to be Charlotte versus Ronda.
Yeah. No, I mean, it would make sense. Is WrestleMania ready for a women's main event? That's the question.
I think they are. I think they 100% are.
I do, too. I don't think it's going to happen this year, though. I don't think we're going to see it. I think they're testing the water in Evolution.
Yeah, they probably are.
We'll see how that goes.
You're probably right. Just to wrap up the Becky Lynch point.
Yes.
And the Charlotte feud is that no matter how this story ends with them, whether it's a slow double turn or whether they're just two ships that happen to have their own viewpoints, Becky Lynch is a bigger star right now in the eyes of the common fan than she was before.
Oh, totally.
And we're hardcores. We both like Becky. We've both had some great personal interactions with Becky Lynch. We think she's fabulous. We've been fans for a long time. But I think this is, for Becky Lynch, this puts her on the map for a bigger audience than just the hardcores.
Yeah, it's a huge step for her. And, you know, she is the first ever SmackDown Women's Champion, and she's your current champion right now. And she's done it. What she's done on the microphone and her tweets toward Charlotte, awesome. I love it. Bringing out the best in Becky Lynch here, her going up against Charlotte, the turn, everything. So it's been excellent. It's been great for her, and it's only going to make her bigger and better.
So, Mike, I did have this. So we're going to do this live to tape, right?
Let's go.
So I have one more question, and I'm just looking at my timer, and you know how I like these podcasts to be nice and concise and tidy, right? So we're at the 40-minute mark on this thing right now, or approximately, right?
We're doing good.
So should we go forward with my next subject, which is about the eras? Or should we tease it and say we're going to do this topic next week, and then we can do our Twitter poll about it, we can get fan response and things like that? Mike, what's your vote?
You know, Jimmy, as much as I could go on about that right now with the era, I'm going to, yes, next week.
Okay.
Tease it. Let's go. Let's tease it.
So essentially, WWE put up a video on their website sometime on Sunday, which caught my eye. It's which era is better, the current era or the Attitude Era? I'm going to add a third option to this, the Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair 80s era. And Alex, our sales minion at the Sports Hub, as I was talking to him about this, he thought that we should add the Ruthless Aggression era.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is on the at WrestleCast985 Twitter account, we're going to put a poll up there. Which era was the best era? The 80s Hogan Flair era, the Attitude Era, the Ruthless Aggression Era, or the current era of WWE?
And when we say current, you want to say like 2016, 2015 on? More
so
or less?
We're talking probably like WrestleMania 32 Dallas.
Okay, that right know, before the brand split. Yeah, before the brand split.
You know, around like where your featured guys are, The Shield,
yeah,
and
Roman Reigns. Yeah, yeah. I get it.
Right now, how we're looking at the roster.
The women's
evolution, things of that sort. So we'll put that up on a poll. We'll get your response. I have notes on it. It's going to bleed through another 20 minutes. We should do it next week.
I'm with you, Jimmy. I'm with you. Next week, and we'll have some fan interaction. This was a fun show, though. Triple H took up a lot of it, but a lot of ground covered here. I'm still amazed. 3 shows in 6 weeks coming up. Unbelievable.
So before you, and we're gonna do this again live to tape. Should we do Twitter questions next week, Mike?
Fire them away. Let's go.
Okay. So two things for next week's show. We're gonna do this poll. We're gonna do this Attitude Era versus the World, and then we're gonna take your Twitter questions. So if you have a question, you'll see it on the WrestleCast985 Twitter account. We'll come up with some hokey hashtag. And we will go from there, and we will take your questions and go from there.
Yeah, we'll do at least 3 questions, at least 3. How's that?
Well, yes. I'm sure that we'll have plenty of questions.
Oh, yeah. Fire away.
So you'll find that on Mike's account at Sarge985. You'll find it on my account at IamJamesStewart, the at WrestleCast985 account. And before we wrap up, Mike, who is the salesman of all salesmen, we have to tell you that Jimmy Hart is coming to Kowloon, that Bruce and Conrad are coming to Kowloon. You can get your tickets for their appearances. I believe Jimmy Hart is October 13th.
That's a Saturday afternoon, 4 to 8 o'clock, yes.
And I believe the Bruce and Conrad Something to Wrestle With show is Sunday, October 21st.
That is also correct. You're 2 for 2, Jimmy.
And you can get tickets at 781-233-0077.
Excellent.
We may be talking to some of the parties involved if I can figure it out technology-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
if you hear from them, it means I figured it out technology-wise. If you don't hear from any or all of those parties, it means that technology has failed me and has failed you, the listener.
And looking forward to that October 13th with Jimmy Hart, and then the 21st with Bruce and Conrad. So at WrestleCast95, we'll put that poll up, Jimmy. It's going to be good. Check it out.
Any other closing thoughts?
I just want to wish a happy birthday to the commissioner of Monday Night Raw, Stephanie McMahon. I think that's most appropriate. She turns 42 this week, if you can believe it. So Stephanie, the brainchild, more or less, of the women's evolution because of her. It's because we may see a Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey main event of WrestleMania 35, which Jimmy is salivating over, or more of these women's pay-per-views, which is a great addition to the company. So happy birthday, Stephanie McMahon. I'll leave you with a quote on her in a moment as we close out the show.
Or it's because WWE saw that UFC was successful promoting women in the main event, so they decided to do it too.
Sure, it works.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of the 985thesportshub.com website. and on 98.5 The Sports Hub's app. While you're there, check out all of the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. All of our podcasts are also available in the Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
Here's your quote. These people want you to quit just like CM Punk did.
Excuse me?
That's what Stephanie McMahon said. I was telling you.
Wait, you're not ending the show with CM Punk slander. You're not.
I have to. It's a Stephanie McMahon quote. I don't care.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.